Welcome to the HJ Talks About Abuse podcast. In this podcast, we talk about sexual abuse cases in the hope it will assist listeners in openly discussing topics which have been ignored for too long. This podcast is brought to you by the abuse team at Hugh James. We are lawyers, so we do tend to speak about the legal aspects of abuse cases, but we aren't too shy to speak up about the broader issues faced by survivors too.
Hello, podcast listeners. This is Sam Barker from Hugh James Solicitors, and I'm joined by the abuse team leader, Alan Collins.
Hello, Sam. Hello, podcast listeners. Thank you for joining us.
So, Alan, we are recording another podcast today. Today we're using Microsoft Teams, and we're coming together to speak about what is the extremely relevant and important decision in relation to Cardinal George Pell. So the Australian High Court earlier this week handed down a judgment which quashed Cardinal Pell's conviction and overturned the Court of Appeal's decision in relation to his conviction. So it's big news in Australia and it's big news abroad, and obviously it has a lot of ramifications. And Alan, what's your first thoughts in relation to this judgment?
Well, I think there's two points to make. Number one is that the whole case is controversial in the sense that there are very strong opinions as to Pell's innocence or guilt. There's a lot of polarization, and that makes it difficult to analyze what the High Court judgment was all about. And so the second point is, in relation to that High Court judgment, is actually understanding why the High Court overturned the jury's verdict. Because to many listeners, they'll be saying, well, if the jury heard the evidence and they thought Pell was guilty, that should have been the end of the matter. But that is what I think you and I can talk about in today's podcast.
Absolutely. So, look, you know, the starting point is that the High Court asked itself whether there was a significant possibility that an innocent person had been convicted.
And they arrived at the answer that the answer must be yes. And I think it's important to remember that Pell was convicted in respect of serious sexual offences that the Crown brought this case on in respect of what happened at the Melbourne Cathedral, the Catholic Cathedral in Melbourne, where Pell was the Archbishop. And as I understand it, the allegations were that against the backdrop of a service at the cathedral, Pell had committed allegedly serious sexual offences in respect of two choir boys.
Yeah, so it was at the cathedral, and there were a lot of witnesses who were called, both by the prosecution and by the defence. But the prosecution witnesses, there were certain witnesses whose evidence tended to suggest that the offending was improbable.
Indeed.
The High Court focused on.
Yeah, and I have to say that I didn't really understand until I read the High Court judgment how fundamental those witnesses were, because the prosecution had as prosecution witnesses these witnesses who basically were undermining the Crown's case and were actually, in a way, I suppose, supporting Pell's claim that he was innocent, because as you're saying, Sam, they were giving evidence that basically that made it look as though it was impossible for the offences to have been committed as alleged.
Yeah, so look, I think the timeline on this is interesting, and maybe it'd be helpful to go through that briefly for the listeners. So Cardinal Pell was initially convicted on the 11th of December 2018, and that was following a jury trial in the County Court of Victoria. That later went to the Court of Appeal on appeal, obviously. And the Court of Appeal, in a split majority, there was two of the justices which found that the evidence was compelling enough to essentially find his guilt, and so they wouldn't interfere with the jury verdict. And there was one dissenting judge, who was Justice Weinberg, who found that it tended to suggest Cardinal Pell was innocent. That went to the High Court, and that's the case we're dealing with now. And in the Court of Appeal, there was a lot of focus on the complainant's evidence, so Witness A. And the Court of Appeal, the majority judges found that his evidence was compelling, and they found that he was very credible. Whereas the High Court has focused on, as you were saying, Alan, this other evidence, which tended to suggest that the jury should have entertained doubt as to Cardinal Pell's guilt. So it's the focus on the evidence, which is somewhat different in from the High Court's approach.
Well, yeah, and I think, you know, there's been a lot of heat generated by this judgment. And so we need to look at the light, and the light shines on the fact that it's the Crown that brings the case, and it's the Crown that has to prove the case. And juries are being told all the time, you know, if there's an element of doubt, you have to give the defendant the benefit of the doubt. It's not for the defendant to prove innocence, it's for the Crown to prove beyond reasonable doubt guilt. And the High Court is saying, well, on the basis of this evidence, the jury, if properly directed and had given proper thought to the evidence in front of it, would inevitably have some doubt, therefore would have had to have found Pell not guilty. And I think this is what it's all about. And it seems to me that the lesson or the moral of the story is that you've got to get it right first time, because if you don't get it right first time, the case is going to end up in front of some appeal judges somewhere or other. And the risk is that the appeal judges then say, well, actually, this isn't right, and they overturn the conviction. And it seems to me that, I don't know if you agree with me, Sam, on this, is that it all goes back to the fact that you had a whole series of witnesses who were giving evidence in respect of two different sides of the coin, so to speak. You've got witness A, who the Court of Appeal thought was credible. And presumably the Court of Appeal thought was credible, given their judgment, albeit, as you said, it was a split judgment. And then on the other side, you've got these other witnesses who were integral to the case and actually undermining the Crown's case. So it seems to me as if that can't be squared off one way or the other right at the very beginning, it's hardly surprising that you end up with this High Court judgment. That's what I think. And I don't know what you think about that.
No, I think you're right, Alan. You know, when you're coming from the starting point that the prosecution had to, which was they had to apply for an advance judgment in order to cross-examine their own witnesses. And that's because there was discrepancies between their own witnesses' accounts, which tended to suggest there was Pell, that the offending might not have happened. So that was where they started from, was that they needed to cross-examine some of their own witnesses.
And that must sort of be a bad place to start. I think if you have to do that in order to
prove your case, then it's very difficult. You know, it's not surprising that the case was extremely controversial and extremely difficult.
Yeah.
You know, we're adding to what is a historic allegation of child sexual abuse dating back some 20 years. This is ordinarily very difficult to prove.
Personally, I don't like the word historic, because for the survivor and the victim, it's not historic, because it's for them, it's in many cases, it almost feels as though it happened yesterday. So I don't like the word historic. But in this context, it's important to understand that when a court is trying to examine allegations that occurred some years ago, like in this case, well over 20 years ago, it presents a huge challenge. With the best will in the world, no one has a 100% perfect memory where they can recall absolutely everything that's occurred in their lives. You know, that's the reality.
And I guess the way to look at it is non-recent. These are non-recent allegations. You know, in any case where, you know, the passage of time is going to affect the memories of key witnesses, there is going to be some extremely difficult challenges that both sides need to grapple with, and the judge and the jury. You know, these are things that they all have to grapple with, and it's very difficult to try to piece together something that happened 20 years ago.
Well, that's right. And, of course, you've got the fact that the vast majority of sexual abuse takes place behind closed doors, so to speak, and there are usually no witnesses of the actual sexual abuse that is allegedly taken place or has taken place. And so if you're bringing the case where you're the Crown or whether you are the lawyer for the claimant in a civil action, you're looking for corroboration, backup evidence. What else is there that shines a light on what is supposed to have happened? So yes. Are there documents? Are there previous complaints? So you're looking for that corroboration all the time because it's key to underpinning a case. And if you've got problems with the underpinning of your case, well, it's hardly surprising when things sadly go wrong for the survivor.
Yeah. And I think in this case where the prosecution was advancing that there was, you know, the weight of evidence suggested there was a possibility this offending did occur, that in some way does play into the hands of the defence, because there's also, given the weight of some of the contradictory evidence, that there's the possibility that it didn't occur. And if that's the case, then there could be some doubt that needs to be entertained by the jury. And I think ultimately that's what the High Court has found, that there was a sufficient basis to entertain doubt and therefore it should have been an acquittal. And, you know, I guess as much as you and I are talking about that these cases are very, very difficult, and they are, the complainant has, in this case, Witness A, has released a statement himself following the High Court's judgment saying that victims of sexual abuse should not be discouraged from coming forward to the police because, you know, although this is going to be a very hard judgment for a lot of people, it's all right that people come forward and that, you know, these matters are properly investigated.
Indeed, it is. And it is very important that victims and survivors do come forward and they should not be discouraged by this decision. I think it's important for everybody to understand the High Court decision and why the High Court arrived at the decision that it made. I think it has to be viewed objectively, no matter how difficult it is, to understand how the law works. And I think a lot of people who've expressed in very heated terms their opinions about the judgment don't necessarily look at the legal issues objectively. And I don't mean that in a sort of condescending way, far from it. Everyone's entitled to their own opinion, but it's not, I think it's constructive. I think you have to look at it objectively and constructively because it teaches us that you've got to make sure that you've got your ducks in a row, that the evidence is there, but the evidence isn't flawed, and that affords you the best chance of securing a conviction or in the civil arena, a finding that the victim is telling the truth, that their case has succeeded and there is liability on the part of the abuser or those responsible for the abuser.
Yeah, and look, you know, taking away the horrific nature of the case in that this arises out of allegations of child sexual abuse and how grave those matters are, you know, we do have to look at these things objectively and we do have to remind ourselves that these structures are in place, these appeal judgments and, you know, the ability to take a case up higher to be further scrutinized because of the gravity of the consequence. People are being deprived of their freedom. And I'm not speaking specifically about Cardinal Pell here, but just generally about how the rule of law and our justice system works. You know, it has to be held up to scrutiny and there has to be a measure of certainty that the person you are sending to prison is in fact guilty. And that has to be borne in mind, I think.
And these judgments and these rules and these pieces of law that, you know, everyone thinks, oh, you know, this is all madness. But actually, they're there to provide a set of pathways for a case to travel down in order to arrive, hopefully, at a fair, just decision.
And we have to remind ourselves again that this is an unusual case. Surely it's not something that happens very often that jury verdicts are interfered with. It's something that happens rarely.
Well, that's right. That's right. And that's why I say that this case needs to be viewed objectively and constructively because it serves as a very good reminder of how legal cases are brought and how they're presented in order to arrive at, but hopefully a just decision at the very end of the process.
Yeah. Well, it's been since 2018, this series of judgments. So it's been a long story and I really still don't think it's one that's over. As far as we can read in the media in Australia, there are other cases that might be arising out of this. Again, still watch this space and we'll continue to do podcasts as news pops up about this.
Indeed. Thank you very much, Sam. Thank you very much, listeners.
Thank you very much, Alan.
Thank you for listening to this episode of HJ Talks About Abuse. You can subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Spotify, and Google Play. If you would like to speak to Alan or I about something you have heard this week, or even if you would like to suggest a topic for a future episode, please do get in touch at aboutabuse@hjtalks.co.uk.